36 Remedies for a Broken Society. Following is a list of recommendations and suggestions compiled from various sources for bringing a zombie nation back to being a free and functioning democratic republic. Some of the recommendations are self-evident, others perhaps wistful, but all should be given consideration. 1. The Federal Reserve System, a collection of privately owned banks, should be audited immediately. Privatization of U.S. money is unconstitutional because the Constitution states that only Congress shall coin and regulate money. Now, privatization has led to economic disaster. The printing of the dollar should be approved through Congress and issued through the U.S. Treasury as U.S. Treasury notes. Notes should be distributed gradually so as not to significantly inflate the worth of the currency in circulation. U.S. debt through fractional reserve lending has been created by sleight of hand. It can be abolished by sleight of hand. 2. Only those who pay into Social Security should be able to benefit from the system. Placing Congress under the Social Security plan that the remainder of the nation must live under would swiftly bring needed repairs. The members of Congress have exempted themselves from Social Security as well as from any future mandatory health care plan. Their current and generous private congressional retirement program should be ended. 3. The National Security Act of 1947 should be reviewed and perhaps rescinded. Currently, the law allows the president and his national security handlers to bypass elected representatives in Congress, the media, and the public in serious policymaking decisions involving war, technology, and even issues of outer space. 4. Executive Order No. 13233, which allows the incumbent president to classify and keep from the public the libraries and documents of his predecessors, should be rescinded. 5. No U.S. intelligence employee, whether civilian or military, who has attained the status of officer should be allowed to run for or serve as President of the United States. Years of intelligence work expose a person to the seamy world of lies, deceit, and misdirection. For some instances of national defense, this may be necessary, but such work leaves a person in public office open to blackmail and control from former superiors and their loyalty oaths. 6. Unlike the current system, where sometimes a dozen or more lobbyists can seek communication with legislators, all corporations should be allowed to have only one lobbyist per congressman. They should also have to visit that congressman with a public advocate who can argue on the side of the people. Fact-finding junkets and entertainment for Congress members should come solely from closely monitored public expenses. 7. Limit senators to 3 terms and representatives to no more than 6. Legislators who remain in office too long become political professionals, more concerned with getting reelected and maintaining their power than with the problems of the public. Most start their career with a genuine desire to serve the people. They should be turned out, as this desire is turned to cynicism by the temptations of money and power. 8. A term limit of 12 years should be set for Supreme Court justices to prevent old age infirmities and experience based on life 30 years ago from including their judgment. Furthermore, all federal district judges should be elected by the public and limited to 2 terms of 5 years to prevent the loading down of federal benches with political hacks who primarily vote party politics or the wishes of those who put them in power. 9. The Pledge of Allegiance should be said every day at school and every day in Congress to remind both young and old of the basic tenets of U.S. sovereign freedom and democracy. 10. Legislation should prohibit any person who has membership in any secretive organization, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, Bilderberger Group, and so on, from holding public office. One cannot have dual allegiance. It is clear that individuals cannot support state sovereignty while supporting the globalist agenda of their fellow society members. 11. the classification process has gotten out of hand. Today, routine documents are classified, sometimes due to holdover policies of the Cold War, sometimes just to cover up bungling or neglect. The current practice of classifying any non-classified document, if it can be connected to one that is classified, must be stopped. Unless information clearly jeopardizes national security, it should remain open to public scrutiny. A citizen review board, composed of academics, journalists, and others, not just government insiders, should oversee this process to protect both security and the public's right to know. 12. The Patriot Act should be rescinded. It was passed by a panicked Congress that was not given time to even read it and has led to infringements on the public's civil liberties. 13. To prevent a repetition of the deficient Warren and 9/11 commissions, both of which in 2010 continued to draw criticism from a wide swath of the American public, any future investigation of a national tragedy should be formed from citizens representing a wide cross-section of regional, political, philosophical, and professional expertise. A 1991 Gallup poll showed almost 75% of the public disbelieved the Warren Commission's lone assassin theory of the JFK assassination. All major pieces of evidence against the accused Lee Harvey Oswald, his fingerprints on the rifle, neutron activation analysis of the bullet metal, and testimony taken at the time, have proven deficient or untrue. The entire JFK assassination case has been riddled with fabrication of evidence, suppression of evidence, alteration of evidence, and intimidation of witnesses. Read Jim Marr's Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, for full details. By 2010, even top officials of the 9/11 Commission, tasked with finding out what happened to America on September 11, 2001, including Commission Co-Chairman Lee Hamilton and Senior Counsel John Farmer, had publicly questioned the conclusions of their own commission. Farmer, a former New Jersey Attorney General, in his 2009 book, The Ground Truth, The Story Behind America's Defense on 9/11, even wrote, "In the course of our investigation into the national response to the attacks, the 9/11 Commission staff discovered that the official version of what had occurred the morning of September 11, 2001, that is, what government and military officials had told Congress, the Commission, the media, and the public about who knew what, when, was almost entirely and inexplicably untrue. At some level of the government, at some point in time, there was an agreement not to tell the truth about what happened." 14. A committee composed equally of professionals and ordinary citizens from separate states should be formed to oversee government health agencies, such as the FDA, the NIH, and the CDC, to ensure that decisions affecting the public, particularly those dealing with research and conflicts of interest concerning employees and contract personnel, are impartial. 15. No state law passed by popular vote should be superseded by any federal statute except for those found in the U.S. Constitution. No federal official should tell the people of a state to ignore their own laws, as happened in the case of new Tennessee firearms legislation. If a state law is bad, federal officials should simply work to see that law revised or rescinded. 16. Citizens should regularly request comprehensive annual financial reports, CAFRs, from all school, local, county, and state offices, including federal agencies. This may be done by submitting public information requests, PIRs. In this manner, citizens could see precisely how much money is being held and how much it is being spent. 17. All regional and global trade agreements, pacts, and treaties, such as the World Trade Organization, WTO, the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and the Central America Free Trade Agreement, CAFTA, should be reviewed to determine if they violate the U.S. Constitution or the rights of Congress to regulate commerce and trade. Today, some trade agreements have been used to supersede U.S. laws. As a signatory nation, the United States has committed itself to conforming its laws and policies to WTO dictates and as the WTO has exhibited strong enforcement of its policies, the mere threat of a WTO challenge usually results in changes of the national laws or policies. For example, in 2002, a WTO appellate panel ruled that U.S. tax rules exempting some corporate income earned overseas from taxation constituted an illegal subsidy. The tax rules were changed. According to Representative Ron Paul, a 2008 presidential candidate, "Incredible as it seems to liberty-minded Americans, the WTO and the Europeans are now telling us our laws are illegal and must be changed." It's hard to imagine a more blatant example of a loss of U.S. sovereignty. Yet there is no outcry or indignation in Congress at this naked demand that we change our laws to satisfy the rest of the world. I've yet to see one national politician or media outlet even suggest the obvious, namely that our domestic laws are simply none of the world's business. Congress may not object to being pushed around by the WTO, but the majority of Americans do. 18. The Posse Comitatus Act, which prevents the military from policing the U.S. public, should be upheld by the executive branch of government. 19. The current practice of outsourcing the production of military hardware to foreign countries must be stopped. Any arms and equipment, particularly computers vulnerable to hacking, being used by the U.S. military should be produced in the United States by American companies using American workers. Under present outsourcing policies, an enemy of the United States could gain intelligence, if not outright control, over our defense systems, particularly through third parties. One friendly country makes our weapons, then sells or trades the technology to an enemy nation. The benefits of such action could be self-evident, especially in view of the number of former friends who later turned enemy, for example, Saddam Hussein. The current system, of course, is compatible with the one-world plans of the globalists. 20. Non-immigrant visas should be discouraged. Temporary foreigners working for lower wages take jobs from the U.S. labor pool, today plagued by rising unemployment. 21. The government should rescind all so-called hate crime legislation. Such laws cannot truly stop individuals from holding hateful beliefs. Furthermore, these laws contradict the Bill of Rights and can be abused to silence political dissidents and enemies. The mass media has been quite successful in changing prejudicial attitudes in the past. No laws susceptible to misuse need be made. 22. America's prison system should be overhauled so that nonviolent offenders are able to move through a series of increasingly lenient punishments, fines, community service, etc., without going to jail. Career criminals and gang members should be separated and placed in supervised work projects outside the public. 23. The government must end the failed war on drugs and legalize marijuana, which has been proven less harmful than legal drugs, cigarettes, and alcohol. According to drugwarfacts.org, there are simply no credible medical reports to suggest that consuming marijuana has caused a single death. Furthermore, the National Commission on Marijuana in 1972, after making a study of pot smokers, concluded no significant physical, biochemical, or mental abnormalities could be attributed solely to their marijuana smoking. Neither the marijuana user nor the drug itself can be said to constitute a danger to public safety. Marijuana's actual impact on society does not justify a social policy designed to seek out and firmly punish those who use it. President Richard Nixon, who appointed this commission, disavowed its findings and launched the first war on drugs. Like prohibition before it, the current prohibition of many drugs has only promoted organized criminals and injustices by authorities. Surveys have shown that a large portion of the nation's inmates are in prison because of drug-related offenses. By ending the prohibition of certain drugs, the overcrowding in U.S. prisons could immediately be relieved. This change, along with a tax on marijuana, should increase government income without the need for taxes to support more police and prisons. 24. At the very least, marijuana should be federally decriminalized. There should only be misdemeanor fines for abuse of the drug. Drug abuse should be seen for what it is, a health problem. The criminalization of drugs has only created a legacy of corruption and violence, just as prohibition did before it. Industrial hemp, which has no psychoactive properties, should be legalized so that American farmers can once again make use of this profitable and exceptional rotational crop useful for making clothing, rope, biodegradable plastics, and paper. Hemp, which was a major crop in the United States until after World War II, must now be imported from other countries. The U.S. government cannot seem to distinguish between non-psychoactive industrial hemp and marijuana. 25. The export of arms from the United States should be significantly curtailed. As the largest arms-exporting nation in the world today, the United States must take some responsibility for the armed violence racking the planet. 26. Farmers who now collect payment for not planting crops and attempt to keep crop surpluses down and prices up to protect the growers instead should be allowed to plant whatever they desire. Any surplus should be purchased by the government and exported for profit under the reasoning that few nations will bite the hand that feeds them. 27. The government should not be allowed to confiscate private assets unless they are taken from someone who has been convicted and sentenced to have assets forfeited in a court of law. Under current asset forfeiture policies, discussed previously and which vary widely between jurisdictions, government agencies, including local police, can confiscate private property without charging anyone with a crime. Today, the asset forfeiture policies are increasingly unfair and being misused. Should a home be raided by police and any amount of drugs found, the house can be confiscated despite the objections of the owner, who may have been absent or even renting the property. Yet if drugs are found in a corporate-owned facility such as a large hotel, the hotel is not forfeited. A nonprofit organization called Forfeiture Endangers American Rights, FEAR, claimed $7 billion has been forfeited to the federal government since 1985, and that 80% of the forfeited property during the past 10 years was seized from owners who were never charged with a crime. Although asset forfeiture was initially tolerated by the public because it was attached to drug laws, today more than 200 federal forfeiture laws are now applied to non-drug-related crimes. 28. Public school systems should allow students the freedom to gain experience outside the classroom. Experience is the greatest teacher in life. Students, as with most humans, tend to act more responsibly if treated like mature persons rather than as children or inmates. Public money now spent on massive football stadiums and AstroTurf could be better spent on field trips to libraries and museums. 29. For most students, less attention should be given to becoming prepared for college, and more emphasis should be placed on vocational training, which will prepare students to make a living in the real world. Such preparation would place a large number of graduates into a meaningful and profitable workforce of those with needed skills, such as auto mechanics, plumbers, carpenters, masons, welders, and others. 30. Each student should be taught that English is the official language of America, but with all due consideration given to other languages and ethnic cultures. Americans can speak the same language and the country will still remain the melting pot of the world. Just try going to any other country in the world and trying to get them to speak English as the official language. In a nation filled with traffic signs, commercial signage, and the media material in English, non-English speakers are at a distinct disadvantage, but it is up to them to correct this, not the nation. 31. Students should be encouraged to think critically rather than simply to regurgitate names and dates that will never be relevant in their lives. Additionally, they should learn to question authority rather than blindly obey it, as this could prevent another devastating experience such as Hitler's Germany or Stalin's Russia. 32. After a thorough grounding in reading, writing, and arithmetic, Students should be encouraged to follow their own interests without being straitjacketed by government curricula. No one can be taught if they are not willing to learn. People learn when they are motivated to learn. Schools should make available the materials while the students, aside from the basics, should be allowed to pursue their own interests. By the way, whatever happened to studies in philosophy? 33. Large pharmaceutical corporations should not be able to hold proprietary information and patents on discoveries made in publicly supported academic institutions. Today, should a new drug be discovered by a university department, it frequently is licensed to a drug manufacturer who, through mass marketing, gains great profits while the school merely makes the licensing fee. 34. Direct-to-consumer drug ads should again be banned from visual and electronic media. Only the patient and his or her doctor should be able to influence that patient's decision to take a certain medicine. Drug companies should provide doctors with full factual information on any given drug. Furthermore, there should be a ban on lobbying activities that border on being bribes, such as paid seminars to luxury resorts or any form of expensive gift from drug companies. 35. The Codex Alimentarius, which sets standards to regulate or prohibit vitamins, minerals, and other forms of homeopathic therapies, should be done away with on the grounds that it unjustly limits personal liberties. Rather than simply dismissing homeopathic treatments, alternative medicine, because they are not sanctioned by pharmaceutical companies, government agencies like the FDA should order experiments to determine if any homeopathic therapies produce positive results in health. That said, in order to reduce the power of giant pharmaceutical corporations, physicians should return to more natural and homeopathic remedies. 36. Any new healthcare plan must eliminate the waste and cost of non-productive intermediaries. Doctors who actually treat patients and their support systems, such as testing laboratories, should be the only ones who get paid. There should be direct responsibility and obligation between the treating physician and the patient. Defeat fascism. The website freepeopleontheland.wordpress.com has pledged to defeat fascism and stop the abuse of power by the government and top corporations. In Nazi Germany, the state gained control over the corporations. In modern America, the corporations have gained control over the state. The end result is the same. For all those zombies capable of awakening from their media-induced daze, the Defeat Fascism pledge may prove a rousing rallying call. I will turn off all mainstream media now and question everything I see and hear. Ask yourself, what information are they editing out and why? I will study the history of our founding fathers, our Declaration of Independence, and our Constitution. I will let the Fed, an unconstitutional banking system, pay their own bills. I vow to get off their money system now and establish local monetary systems for exchange of goods and services. I will donate $10 in cash to local monetary systems, and in 6 months, we will have a new interest-free constitutional economic system for a free people. I will take the Oath Keeper oath to defend the Constitution. I will join the constitutional local militia. I will understand the local militia is our greatest constitutional deterrent against a tyrannical government, and I will no longer hold them in disdain, but will serve in any capacity, even if I don't have a gun. Let "Don't Forget Katrina" be your battle cry. I will teach my children their constitutional rights by standing up for these rights at every turn. I will leave a legacy of liberty and freedom for our children and future generations. I will start a victory garden and get off the grid. I pledge, along with all constitution-loving free people on the land, my life, my fortunes, and my sacred honor to one another, and will attack any brown shirts or thugs who come to my doors in the middle of the night. Even without a pledge, some zombies are awakening from their hypnotic state and changing their lifestyles. Former business executive Chris Martinson explained his personal awakening from living a life of material dependence and media saturation. Before, I'm a 40-year-old professional who has worked his way up to vice president of a large international Fortune 300 company and is living in a waterfront five-bedroom house in Mystic, Connecticut, which is mostly paid off. My three young children are either in or about to enter public school, and my portfolio of investments is being managed by a broker at a large institution. I do not really know any of my neighbors, and many of my local connections are superficial at best. After, I am a 45-year-old who has willingly terminated his former high-paying, high-status position because it seemed like an unnecessary diversion from the real tasks at hand. My children are now homeschooled, and the big house in Mystic was sold in July of 2003 in preference for a 1.5-bathroom rental in rural western Massachusetts. In 2002, I discovered that my broker was unable to navigate a bear market, and I've been managing our investments ever since. Since that time, my portfolio has gained 166%. I grow a garden every year, preserve food, know how to brew beer and wine, and raise chickens. I've carefully examined each support system, food, energy, security, etc., and for each of them, I've figured out either a means of being more self-sufficient or a way to do without. But most importantly, I now know that the most important descriptor of wealth is not my dollar holdings, but the depth and richness of my community. Moving from the city and living off the land is not possible for everyone. But simple changes in lifestyle can be accomplished with a minimum of disruption. One of Newton's laws of physics states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Though the analogy is not exact, imagine how it may work in a just world. Whatever pernicious plans tyrants create to hold down the citizens of their zombie nation, an equally powerful and beneficial force will surface to thwart such efforts. What must the people of the zombie nation do to achieve personal freedom and contentment? Resist the impulse to give way to anxiety, fear, or depression when you read and view the deprivations of those who would enslave humanity. Citizens must know they are not alone in their dissatisfaction. Millions of thoughtful and good-hearted people are working diligently each day to bring enlightenment and peace to the planet. But these citizens must also recognize that when they hear of only suffering and hardship, they are not getting the whole story from the mass media. In fact, most times, news of a beneficial and positive nature will rarely be found in the newspapers or on TV. It simply has to become a local reality in our lives. These citizens must remember that what one person can make, another person can break. And whatever is broken by one can be fixed by another. America does not need a violent revolution. The goodness of its people and the Constitution are still in place. If enough citizens simply wake up to the treachery of the New World Order, the situation will change. After all, almost no one truly wants to live in servitude or under a tyrannical police state. And, to avoid future tyranny, it will take a united citizenry dedicated to truth, justice, tolerance, and equality of opportunity. To work together, we do not need to resort to a socialist government, which could easily be transformed into a tyranny. What is even more terrifying is what could happen if the current administration continues with its policies unabated. Tax-paying Americans will become so disenchanted and disgusted with the government's attempts to turn America into a socialist government that they will accept an inevitable right-wing backlash. Again, America will oscillate back to a national socialist administration as an answer to the country's problems. As the economy deteriorates and the police state tightens its grip, the corporate mass media will present to the public a new leader as the nation's savior. He or she will mimic the words of Hitler and essentially say, "Give me the power, and I will save and protect you." Americans must be on guard against the effort to swing the electorate back to a more right-wing version of socialism. If the out-of-control government spending, a cessation of civil rights abuses, and a restructuring of the financial system cannot be resolved in a few years, the alternative is unthinkable. Well into 2010, a remarkable number of Americans even continued to question President Obama's constitutional qualification to serve. Obama's legal, long-form birth certificate still had not been made public, and the controversy over his birth was continuing, despite a lack of coverage in the mass media. Even some members of the military were questioning the legality of their commander-in-chief. First Lieutenant Scott Easterling, an active-duty soldier stationed in Iraq, in an open letter wrote, "To whom it may concern, as an active-duty officer in the United States Army, I have grave concerns about the constitutional eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama to hold the office of President of the United States." Easterling added, "Until Mr. Obama releases a vault copy of his original birth certificate for public review, I will consider him neither my commander-in-chief nor my president, but rather a usurper to the office, an imposter." Easterling also noted that his officer's oath contains the phrase, "I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign or domestic." Others who have echoed Easterling's challenge include Major General Carol Childers, Lieutenant Colonel David Earl Grafe, Police Officer Clinton Grimes, formerly of the U.S. Navy, and two state legislators, New Hampshire State Representative Timothy Comerford and Tennessee State Representative Frank Nicely. Should it be found out that Obama is indeed not a natural-born citizen, a constitutional crisis would follow because every command and law issued by the Obama administration would be called into question as illegal. Lawyers would have a field day. The birth certificate issue is not really about President Obama, nor is it about a political or race issue. It touches on the most basic foundation of the United States by posing the question, are we a nation of law or a lawless nation? Must we all abide by the Constitution, or are our laws only applicable when we choose to obey them? If any chief executive of the nation can disregard the law of the land, what's to hold in check the criminal who chooses to disobey the law? Should everyone choose which law to obey, the result would be chaos. Perhaps such confusion is part of the globalist plan to deconstruct the United States. The ammo box. American citizens have a rich heritage of individual freedom and liberty that is legally reinforced by the Constitution. But perhaps more important, they have guns, the means to ensure their individual liberty. The early American colonists' petitions for meaningful change fell on deaf ears in England. It was only after armed clashes that they were able to gain their independence. Thomas Jefferson clearly understood the importance of the right to bear arms when he said, "Those who hammer their guns into plows will plow for those who do not." During World War II, the Japanese generals scrapped plans to invade America once they realized that a great many of the American citizenry possessed guns. You cannot invade the mainland United States. There would be a rifle behind every blade of grass, warned Admiral Isoroku Yamamoto. According to Injury Prevention Journal, there are 308 million guns in the hands of citizens, which is an average of one per adult in the United States. Today, with nuclear weapons as a deterrent and millions of guns in the hands of the American public, it is highly improbable that any outside enemy will successfully invade the continental United States. If the danger cannot come from the outside, then it can only come from within. One of our nation's looming threats is the specter of martial law. Today, the federal government is adding firepower to its existing armed military. Even the IRS is arming. In February 2010, the IRS solicited bids on the purchase of 60 Remington Model 870 Police 12-gauge pump-action shotguns for its Criminal Investigation Division agents. But ordinary citizens might consider putting a stop to armed government intervention before it starts. In The Gulag Archipelago, 1918-1956, Nobel Prize winner Alexander Solzhenitsyn explained how Russians held in detention camps bemoaned the fact that nothing was done to prevent government terrorism until it was too late. And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if, during periods of mass arrests, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and at every step on the staircase, but had understood that they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand. The organs would quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and, notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. It is hoped that the rising American police state does not force its citizenry to respond in the way that Solzhenitsyn suggests. But as President John Kennedy observed, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Any thinking person fervently wishes that any serious change in America should come about through the peaceful exercise of the basic rights contained in the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, the supreme law of the land. But after recent Democratic and Republican regimes shredded individual rights and stripped the U.S. economy, firearm and ammunition sales went through the roof. According to Federal National Instant Criminal Background Check System statistics, between January and March 2009, Americans bought 3,818,056 firearms. This is enough weaponry to arm both the Chinese and Indian armies. In reality, this number is quite low, since it does not include the significant number of denials issued or private gun sales that bypass paperwork. Is it possible that the nation is arming for something other than self-protection? Is a violent revolution inevitable? Gun and ammo sales booming. In an attempt to mollify gun owners during a 2008 campaign rally in Lebanon, Virginia, presidential hopeful Barack Obama said, "I don't want any misunderstanding when you all go home and you're talking to your buddies and they say, 'Aw, he wants to take my gun away. You've heard it here. I'm on television, so everybody knows it. I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe in people's lawful right to bear arms. I will not take your shotgun away. I will not take your rifle away. I won't take your handgun away. There are some common sense gun safety laws that I believe in, but I am not going to take your guns away. So if you want to find an excuse not to vote for me, don't use that one. It just ain't true." Despite President Obama's assurances, presidential promises are often weak. Many Americans still recall that President George H.W. Bush pledged no new taxes during his campaign, then raised them after taking office. Many are not taking chances to see whether Obama goes back on his promise. Guns and ammunition sales boomed during the economic crisis. President Barack Obama is the best thing to happen to American gun and ammunition manufacturers since they invented the Defense Department, wrote Eric Sharp in the April 9, 2009 edition of the Detroit Free Press. No one could imagine a business increasing its sales by 60% in these times. But this appears to be the case with firearm stores, online ammo sites, and regional gun shows, where sales exploded beginning in late 2008. Joe Desay opened a family sporting goods store in Montana in 1946. In 1977, he moved the business to Prescott, Arizona, and began to sell guns and ammo under the name J&G Sales. His son, Brad Desay, said that since 2008, their business has tripled normal sales. "It's unprecedented," remarked Desay. Roy Eicher of Hunter's Den in Cincinnati told Newsmen, "The issue with ammo is a pretty simple one, supply and demand. And it's not so much that people are shooting it, it's that they're buying it. You can talk to gun ranges around town, around the country, nobody's shooting the ammo. People are just buying the ammo, in fear of the fact they won't be able to get the ammo." John Wineski, operations manager at Cabela's, the nation's largest sporting goods store in Dundee, Michigan, said ammunition there was selling like wildfire. "Anything that's a center-fire round is selling," he said. Although many argued that the rise in gun sales and ammunition is mostly due to an expectation that Obama will go back on his promise and will restrict firearms in some way, there was nevertheless a darker undercurrent to sales trends. Americans were arming themselves at an alarming rate, and with guns that aren't necessary for hunting. Many stores' ammo shelves, especially surplus outlets, were depleted of military-type munitions, such as AK-47s, large 380 caliber rounds, 7.62 by 54 Russian rounds, and 223 rifle rounds, the caliber for the AR-15, the civilian model of the military's M16 rifle in common use around the world. Stocks of 9mm and 8mm Mauser ammo were dwindling. The public ammo consumption has caused problems for law enforcement officers. Arizona Sheriff Darren White expressed concern that ammunition shortages caused by the public's buying could curtail police training. He complained that ammunition for his own sidearm had been on back order for nearly 3 months. "I've never seen it like this in my more than two decades of law enforcement," said White. Possibly in an effort to keep ammunition out of the public's hands, the Pentagon, under orders from the Obama administration in 2009, sent letters to the nation's ammunition retailers stating that it would no longer sell spent shell casing brass and would instead reduce expended ammunition to scrap metal, virtually useless to ammunition reloaders. Normally, these spent shells are recast by manufacturers and resold to law enforcement agencies, gun shops, and other retail outlets. Curtis Shipley, owner of the ammunition manufacturer Georgia Arms, said, "The distressing part of it was that the government was going to lose money. They were going to lose $2 a pound and accomplish nothing. We felt like it was just an option to bring in ammunition control rather than gun control." The Defense Department directive, however, was rescinded about 10 days later following a deluge of letters, calls, and emails from irate gun owners and manufacturers. Upon review, the Defense Logistics Agency has determined the cartridge cases could be appropriately placed in a category of government property allowing for their release for sale, stated the Pentagon in a statement in March 2009. "It just restores my faith that the system works," said a relieved Shipley. "If enough people are motivated and say, 'Hey, that is wrong,' the system does still work." The system can work if the zombies of modern America refuse to remain in a dazed and drugged state. They can make the system work by seeking alternative sources of news and information and then acting on such information. Most important, they can regain their freedom and sovereignty by seeking a government that goes beyond mere lip service and provides a true democratic republic. Otherwise, the nation could slip into collapse and chaos. Perhaps even revolution. To avert such a future, the American public must gain control over their country. National politicians no longer refer to the republic because modern America has ceased to be one. Today, it is the American Empire, and like Rome and Hitler's Third Reich, it has spread its corporate and military tentacles throughout the world. Political and corporate leadership continually swap roles, creating a merger of the state and industry, the very definition of fascism. This change to socialist fascism, whether from the right or left, has been engineered by the globalist elite who hold monopolies over basic resources, energy, pharmaceuticals, transportation, and telecommunications, including the news media. It appears that the New World Order is really just the Old World Order, a continuing game of the wealthy minority against the working majority, confounded by debt, a controlled mass media and political confabulation. Today, thanks to amazing media technology, the game is packaged with modern advertising slickness, new names, logos, and slogans. But it still remains a matter of the haves lording over the have-nots. These self-styled globalists are now attempting to subdue the American population through a maze of government policies, drugs, a dumbed-down education system, and a controlled corporate mass media. Mergers and leveraged takeovers have concentrated corporate power into fewer and fewer hands. The weakening of the national economy and corporate downsizing have placed undue stress on workers, resulting in the gradual destruction of the nuclear family. Even the fields of religion, education, and entertainment are being used to transform whole generations of formerly free Americans into cowed and subservient zombies in a system increasingly under the control of the globalist elite. The current socialist fascism in America is the way it is simply because somewhere, someone wants it that way. If no one truly wanted the problems that beset the nation, they wouldn't be there. These problems have been created or excoriated by globalists, many of them not even Americans, and their secret societies in the hope of molding the entire world into a few competing socialist blocs. They view the United States as the biggest stumbling block to their plans. This is due to America's tradition of individual freedom, its constitution that guarantees such freedom, and the fact that so many Americans possess firearms to protect their freedom. But true freedom is a transient quality. It must be continually nurtured by a people unified in their dedication to liberty. Americans must seek common ground if the nation is to progress and prosper. America still has millions of competent workers and an abundance of natural resources. If these assets were put to proper use, a unified America could once again become a shining beacon of liberty, justice, and production. And the formula for unity is quite simple. Men and women of good intention and faith all should just agree to disagree, but do so without being disagreeable. They must approach disagreements in a thoughtful and considerate manner. A return to civility is long overdue. To prevent such thoughtful unity, the globalist fascists have attempted to break the United States into divisions of race, sex, age, generation, and culture. They pit bureaucrats, politicians, academics, corporate leaders, and the public against one another in an agenda of divide and conquer. They maintain control in a society fragmented by combative ideologies and philosophies, as well as competing corporate interests by using their corporate mass media assets to degrade the popular culture, downgrade the education process, permit acceptance of a steady flow of illegal immigrants, and divide the population over peripheral issues such as party politics, abortion, sexual relationships, stem cell research, so-called hate crimes, and the like. These globalist fascists scoff at the concepts of true individual freedom and multicultural egalitarianism, for they have no faith in the innate goodness of humankind or its ability for self-government. They have no real faith in a God and use religious ideals and concepts merely as another tool for social control. These globalists see their agenda for worldwide socialism as the only means of maintaining their power and control. The only way, in their view, to maintain the purity of their race and class. They are in it for the long haul. The owners of the multinational corporations with their membership in secretive societies and their well-paid administrators know their goals will not be achieved overnight, although since the attacks of 9/11 they seemed to have redoubled their efforts. The struggle against such steadfast will to power and its attendant control will not be easy. all areas of society will require sacrifice and change. Lifestyles will have to be altered, but it can be done. Hopefully before the United States falls into depression, anarchy, and then a police state. New energy sources and technologies are on the horizon. Technological breakthroughs await only the change of attitude on the part of conventional politics, commerce, and finance. An aroused public could push this attitude change along. Though seldom reported in the corporate-controlled mass media, there is a rising consciousness well underway in the public mind. Informed consumers are beginning to realize they can improve their health by changing their diet and seeking alternative health remedies. Individuals are taking the initiative by listening to voices outside the mainstream media, writing their representatives and local news media, taking part in peaceful demonstrations, and conducting study groups and book review discussions in their homes. They can also vote with their spending habits. If enough people refuse to buy a certain product, whether it's a brand of car, gasoline, or some federal policy proposal, it can force a change of direction in the corporate controllers who, after all, must respond to the bottom line. Many Americans are hopeful. They sincerely believe the system can be changed nonviolently and will begin to work for the benefit of all citizens. But just in case, they retain the right to hold on to their guns. It's not as if America has never experienced a revolution before. If ye love wealth greater than liberty, the tranquility of servitude greater than the animating contest for freedom, go home from us in peace. We seek not your counsel, nor your arms. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you, and may posterity forget that ye were our countrymen. Samuel Adams, Founding Father and Revolutionary. This recording of the $1 trillion conspiracy, how the New World Order, man-made diseases, and zombie banks are destroying America by Jim Mars, was produced by Paul Rubin Productions and read for you by John Pruden. It was recorded, edited, mixed, and mastered by John Marshall Sound. We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio. For more information about the broad range of titles from Harper Audio, Harper Children's Audio, and Cadman, please visit our website at harperaudio.com. Thank you for listening.